on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit today with 88-year-old Harold Lowe of Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from Peoria, Illinois. But in November of 1944, he was an 18-year-old Marine operating a 20-millimeter anti-aircraft gun on the battleship USS Colorado in Leyte Gulf in the Philippines. You said two kamikazes hit your ship there. Was it the first one that injured you?
No, that was the second one that hit on the opposite side, directly opposite my position, which knocked me from my mount against a ready box. On the lid of the ready box, it had a edge where my back hit and so forth, and I was damaged worse than what I thought.
How far would you estimate you were from the impact of that plane?
About 15 yards.
That's really stinking close.
Yes.
So basically a flying bomb. Stuff is flying everywhere, and you go flying into this box. You hurt your back. Did you stay in your position?
No, I got knocked off my gun. The belt that went around my back may have done as much damage as the ready box because the impact knocked me like that.
Mm-hmm. So I imagine this is a pretty chaotic scene, and I want to remind everyone you're 18 years old at the time. You've just seen something you've never experienced before. You're thrown out of your position. What did you do from there? I mean, that had to be pretty jarring and pretty upsetting.
I took a glimpse of our Marines down on the 40-millimeter mount, and the mount was practically destroyed, and seeing the men laying there in blood on the deck and so forth, especially the men that were mature, it affected me a great deal, and they got quite a few of them. I got a couple sergeants and a corporal that I was close to, and it was upsetting because I didn't know whether they were dead or they were going to survive, and unfortunately, they passed away.
Yeah, what I read was that there were 19 men killed in that attack and 72 wounded, so you're one of those 72, but your focus was on the guys who weren't going home, and you said they were mature. These are guys that maybe were married, maybe some of them fathers?
All of them.
All of them?
Yeah.
So you knew that there were a lot of devastated families back home?
Yes. And I knew they were in the war to get it over as quick as possible because they had responsibilities, not only of the war, but of their family. I didn't have the responsibilities of a family.
So you're thinking about them, and that's so heavy emotionally. When did you realize how bad a shape you were in yourself?
I really didn't realize it. I knew that I was handicapped, but I didn't look at it as a handicap at all because I felt secure behind my gun mount.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that I could shoot anything down and that if I didn't, somebody else would.
So were you able to get back into your gun mount?
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. You're hurt, but you go right back to your position and you're firing more.
Right. That's right. In fact, we changed the barrel on my gun because it was so hot. And we had a spare barrel there that we put into the gun right away and took our barrel that was red hot. They had asbestos gloves. They put that barrel in a sleeve-like that had water in it that cooled it off.
Mm-hmm. So you don't really have time to feel sorry for yourself or to tend to your own injuries. You had to finish this battle till it was over.
You just did as you were trained. You had a secure feeling as far as to be able to defend yourself. You felt you could defend yourself as well as your partners aboard ship and the whole ship. You knew you were going to do your job, so you felt confident.
What was the extent of your injuries at the time?
The extent of my injury was that I just couldn't stand at attention if we had quarters. I couldn't lift anything, but I could fire that 20-millimeter gun.
Because it was your back that was hurt.
Back, and the pain that I had from standing behind the mount wasn't something that it just disappeared when you had other things on your mind.
Uh-huh. So you just lived with that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Because you guys had other battles to engage in. A few weeks later, you were shelling Mindoro?
That's right. We went to Mindoro, then Luzon, and then all the way up to the northern end of Luzon and then Guyan Bay.
And it was there that there was another significant tragedy on your ship, as I understand it.
Yes.
What happened there at Lingayen Gulf?
I'm not for sure of the origin, but we had a lot of shrapnel. The captain's quarters was hit with shrapnel, but there was, when you get that shrapnel going and it tears off steel, you get all kinds of strange things. And I had either shrapnel or a piece of bullet hit my nose, and excessive bleeding immediately and so forth. And we were under air attack at the time. Mm-hmm. When it eased down a little bit, why, our captain told me that I had to go to sick bay to get it taken care of. And I went to sick bay, and the doctors were all busy with other people that were more serious. So a corpsman said that he's having trouble getting my nose back straight, and that without seeing a doctor, he was going to try to get it on straight, and he wasn't going to stitch or anything. He was going to tape my nose back right, which he did. He took his scissors and cut the gristle that was all frayed in my nose, got my nose back to where he could tape it on, and I went back to my battle station. 2 weeks later, when a doctor looked at it, why, he said that Corman did a great job, that he would have had to have stitched it, and I would have had a big scar there. It so healed almost perfect.
I'm looking at it now. I can't tell anything ever happened to it. So.
Yeah. You have to really look close.
I'll put a picture of you up on our Hometown Heroes radio website so people can see for themselves. So a little tape and a Corman was the best plastic surgery you ever had, huh?
Oh, it was great. I didn't realize it at the time because it limited my eating with the tape and everything all around my mouth. And the tape came all the way down here.
So you had tape from the bridge of your nose all the way to your chin, basically?
Yeah, he put a lot of tape on because he didn't want it moving around.
Right.
I'm just glad that he did. I don't know the corpsman's name, but I often pray for him.
Yeah, he did you a pretty good favor.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly what you needed. But in that incident, that's January 9th of 45 aboard the Colorado, so you're wounded in the nose, and you're thankful for the corpsman's treatment, but there were 50 others on your ship wounded, and if this number's correct, 18 killed that day.
Mm-hmm.
Did it ever get to you? Did it ever make you think, I might not make it home from this war? When you're seeing 19 guys die at Lady Gulf and another 18 at Lingayen Gulf, did you ever think you were going to be one of those guys?
At that time, it entered my mind because I lost a close buddy of mine from Chicago, Robert Anderson. He was the admiral's orderly and also our captain of the ship's orderly. He was a close friend, and it was difficult to lose him.
He was hit by shrapnel at Lingayen Gulf?
Yes.
You talked before about the guys you lost at Lady and what that did to you, but I get the sense that this one hit you harder. You'd known him for a long time.
Yeah, well, ever since we got into service together, we were close, boot camp, sea school, and then we went aboard the Colorado at the same time.
I know some of these questions are difficult, and certainly this topic is difficult to discuss. But in 70 years since then, have you ever thought about what kind of life he would have had? What kind of man he would have been? Or?
Well, yeah, I've thought about it a great deal. In fact, his sister and his brother-in-law had a tavern in Peoria. I visited them a couple times, and this was after the war, of course, and it brought back memories so where I couldn't go over and visit them anymore. I had to get over that stage.
Well, and I'm glad that you're sharing that with us. I know that's not easy to say, but people need to understand that the scars you bring home from war, even if your nose isn't scarred very badly, there are some other scars that you have to deal with. And the war wasn't over for you.
No.
You've been wounded twice now.
Yes.
But you keep going, and maybe I'm wrong on this, but I'm guessing that you guys had more action and more rounds to fire at Okinawa than the rest of them combined.
Yes. We were under air attack there consistently with kamikazes, and they came in such large numbers that our fighter pilots, even though there were many aces among them, they just couldn't bring them all down and keep them from reaching our fleet. Because of their numerous planes, we had a fear of what was going to happen if this kept up, if they were able to keep sending planes like that down. And it was only about 90 days later that we realized that They were running out of planes. Then we started taking aboard ammunition and so forth and so on to go on to mainland Japan. Just about everybody had a fear. We felt that that may be our last battle, and how the outcome would be, we may not know. But certainly Truman and his decision was applauded by us.
Well, and I want to talk about that, but I don't want to gloss over Okinawa, because basically 2 months straight of being under air attack every single day, and your ship's bigger guns are bombarding Okinawa.
All right? The time, consistently. Yeah. We bombarded Okinawa more than any other ship. Keep those big guns going.
How did you do that day after day after day? What kind of mental focus and resilience did you have to do that? I mean, that seems really grueling and taxing to me.
Well, it was the greatest challenge that we had in the war, and after so long, you still got the fear. Anyone who says he's not afraid may not be telling the truth. I was afraid, but at the same time, you're just so well trained by the Marine Corps at that time, and I'm sure the Navy and Army was the same way. We had a certain pride, and it wouldn't leave you. You knew that you were going to do your job, and more if you had to. You weren't going to give up or anything like that, but you were able to think a little more clearly after being in battles like we were in for so long and so forth.
You mentioned your USS Colorado mug here that notes firing more rounds than any other ship. It also says that 11 Japanese aircraft were shot down. Do you look at any of those and feel like you had a hand in that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very definitely. I think that it was hard, you know, to decide and give credit to what ship was doing it down when you're part of a fleet. You just know that you contributed to many of them being shot down. Fortunately, I was in a fleet of cruisers and battleships and destroyers. We put up a lot of flak. Mm-hmm. It was difficult for them to get through, but there were so many of them that some did. It wasn't nice to look out into the water and see sailors or Marines from another ship that were floating in the water, and that happened frequently.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just curious, because so much of, I think, our perspective on war, and no one wants to go to war. I mean, no one wants to have to deal with it. And we often hear, well, how'd you feel about taking someone else's life and blah, blah, blah. But it seems to me in your position, even though you're operating a weapon that can inflict a lot of damage, your job really was to save lives. I mean, you're defending your ship.
That's correct.
Was there a particular incident where you felt that your work on that 20-millimeter, you know, in concert with all these other ships that are firing, really did save a lot of lives on your ship or another ship?
Well, yes. Yeah, because I was contributing to an effect that was successful in most cases. And where there's success, why, and you're involved in that, why, you feel good about it.
And I know you were wounded twice, and you have the Purple Heart to prove it. But I don't want to assume that that's what you would say is your closest call. When you think back of everything that you went through, is there one moment, one scenario that you feel like you came the closest to not coming home?
Well, when the shrapnel hit my nose, I wasn't really aware because of the tense situation at first. But after I had time to think about it, my nose, that was that close to within about 80 inches of my brain.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the severity of it at the time, why, I don't think I had any other reason to think but of the fact that, wow, that was close.
Well, that's close to a lot of things. It's close to your eyes. You could have been blinded.
Yes.
Close to your jugular.
Yes.
You could have bled out. Close to your brain, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the nose was the best place to get hit?
Well, if you have to get hit, why, I guess it's okay.
Especially if you have a corpsman with that kind of magic tape.
Well, not only that, but my nose wasn't too small anyway. Making it a little smaller kind of helped out.
That's the spirit. Seeing the glass half full, no doubt. And I don't want to make light of it, and you described it earlier, but maybe you can give us a deeper sense of it, too. I imagine this is a pretty bloody situation, right? When you get hit, you probably didn't know how bad it was.
I didn't. In fact, I didn't realize I had so much blood on me all over, and that's what the captain saw that ordered me to go to sick bay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd have just stayed on the station, and we put a little powder on the nose to keep from getting an infection right at my battle station.
Uh-huh.
But when he saw the blood on my uniform, well, he realized that I should go to sick bay.
And I know you're not trying to draw attention to yourself here, but I'm just picturing this, and I'm thinking, man, that would have been a great photograph of valor in the Pacific in World War II to see this Marine on his 20-millimeter mount with blood all over his face, and he's still firing away. And that's what you were, right?
Yes, that was it. I didn't realize it at the time, but that was the picture.
It's a great mental picture for us. Wish I had a real one. I do have some more recent photos relating to Mr. Lowe and his story on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page and also at hometownheroesradio.com. When we come back, a pretty amazing twist to his story that unfolded just in the past year. Back with the rest of Hometown Heroes after this.